Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Shanghai, Say What Radio Show. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard. It is December 15th, 2018. Wow, we're almost halfway through another month, the last month of the year. What is happening? I'm sorry that, well, I'm not sorry at all. All the shows were a little longer this time. And of course we did the special, with the 2 1-hour shows that both of them ran over. So we did run over in this show. But it was okay because Dolly and I were on that show too. So you didn't miss us. And thank you all for who's listening and who's in chat. And Dolly, say hi.
Howdy doody. Howdy doody. I haven't thought of him for a while.
Oh, you know something? That's one of those stories that I bet you most people wouldn't know. Now, you knew Howdy Doody too, because I grew up in Massachusetts and you grew up where?
In Ohio and Indiana.
And you still were brought up with Howdy Doody, who was a puppet, by the way. It was Howdy Doody and Buffalo Bill.
The one with the teeth. Who was that guy? And the hairs. Oh, who was he?
Well, there wasn't Bozo there too? Bozo the Clown?
Oh, I think he was. I never liked clowns. I didn't care for Bozo.
We didn't have a television set I was 9 years old when the family got a television set. So a lot of times we would, if we saw it, we would see it at the neighbor's house. And then when we got our own TV set and we could watch it every day in our house, you know, it was like, oh, my God, died and went to heaven.
Yes.
You know, it was sometimes I think I should go back and look at these things that I was so impressed with at the time. And, you know, think about it. We had the news. A lot of places only had the one channel when they, you know, started out, and then there was like a maximum of three.
Yes.
ABC, CBS, and NBC. And those channels would come on with the news. I mean, virtually in the beginning, they never turned on until the news came on at 5 o'clock at night, right?
I don't remember that part.
Okay, so yeah, they came on, and then you'd have a few entertainment thingies, you know, and then off to bed we go. But then they started gradually making a daytime schedule, and that was interesting because the shows that were being produced and put out there were mainly aimed at women. And
yeah.
They, you know, think about it. There was the woman that got married person, and everything seemed to be around women and children, because you had the Howdy Doody,
Mickey Mouse, Howdy Doody, Sky King.
The Saturday schedule in the morning was all children.
Yeah,
Rin Tin Tin, Lone Ranger.
Rifleman.
Well, that was a nighttime show. Rifleman.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That was an adult show.
Oh, well, I watched it.
the adult ones were like Bonanza. And, then they got into Police Stories, too. You know, Police Stories were big at that time. But, when they had Howdy Doody, you know, I mean, it was, I don't know. Sometimes I think I should go back and watch these things to see what the formulation matrix was in my brain at that time. You know, what were they feeding us at that time?
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, because we were captivated by it.
We were.
You know, But when I became an adult and I moved down here, and then my neighbor became my best friend, Sandy, well, by God, she had actually met Howdy Doody and Buffalo Bob because they retired to Hollywood, Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was one of the organizers of the some big parade they do. And he would more than once had been the honor, you know, what do you call it?
I know what you're saying.
Anyway, the guy that's the celebrity in the parade.
Yeah.
So she got to see Howdy Doody. Although I'm not sure if it was the original. I think the original is the Smithsonian or something, which kind of broke me up. It was a little, oh my God. But the one that I always had, I would like to go back and get that film, see that film again. Do you remember, what was his name? Bob Emery. The guy that did the salute to the President of the United States, and you had to put your heart. Big Bob, Big Brother. Oh, crap. Big Brother, Bob Emery?
Was he on Howdy Doody?
No, but he played it like he was one of those I believe it was a half an hour. I don't, was that the name of it? Let me Google this because Big Brother? Oh, man.
I don't remember that.
Okay, let me see. I'm going to Google.
Was it Mr. Goofy? No.
No.
The puppet with Howdy Doody. I can't remember his name. He looked goofy.
Big Brother. Can't type Brother Bob. Emery. Just like I thought. Now let's see if it's the right guy. Yep. Big Bob, Brother Bob Emery. Oh, let me see. Images. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's him. This guy. You can Google him if you want. I'll put it in chat. Big Brother Bob Emery. He was a guy that would have had a children's show, and every time, I don't remember exactly who the characters were or what, but mostly I remember him sitting at like a table, like a desk type thing, you know, and mm-hmm. I remember every day we had to get our milk so that we could toast the President of the United States, and then we'd put our hands on our hearts and we would say the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, so, I mean, that's what I take away from that particular show, except for one very notorious episode.
Really?
And, oh, yeah, because what happened, for some reason, I don't know what, the station kept playing after the sign-off, and Big Bob said a bunch of bad words, get these little da-da-da bastards out of here. Because he had kids in the, you know, audience type of thing.
I remember that scandal. Yes.
And I was,
don't remember Big Bob.
I was watching it when it happened. Myself and my brothers were watching it. Jim and Phil. Maybe somebody else, but those two would have been there with me. And it was like, what just happened? Because it was like a schizophrenic thing that us kids were subjected to. Here's this guy that we so like and love, you know, and all of a sudden he's swearing at the children and storming out. I mean, it was bizarre. He never came on again.
Maybe that's why I don't remember it. But I do remember it now that you're saying those. I remember that incident. And I was confused, too. I thought, why is he being mean to the kids?
Well, because he hated them, I guess.
I guess so. Well, remember that Soupy Sales?
Did you ever see?
Okay. Remember when he used to go behind the door somebody would knock on the door and he'd open the door and there'd be a guest that would be on the other side of the door. One time he opened it and he was so shocked and he shut the door. He looked at the camera. He was so shocked. He opened the door. He started laughing. He slammed the door. This went on for quite a while. And nobody knew who was behind the door. It was a naked woman. The crew had gotten together and had a naked woman stand behind the door, and he was trying to not react even more so than he did.
So he kept opening the door, hoping that somebody with clothes on would show up?
I think he kept looking at the naked woman. He couldn't believe they did that to him, set him up like that. And I know the rest of the show was very jovial.
Oh, I imagine. Oh, heavenly day.
I saw him interviewed about that one time. He said, I couldn't believe it.
I didn't really like him.
I didn't care for him either. I didn't know why, but I didn't care for him.
I think he was, well, I'm not going to say what I think.
I think maybe he was too fake.
I didn't like him. Oh, let's not talk about him anymore.
Oh, okay.
He's giving me the willies.
Oh, my gosh. I liked Sky King. I love.
Oh, that was so much fun.
I had a crush on Sky King.
I had a crush on the airplane. You know, again, because think about it. We as children, that was a show that we spent a lot of time in an airplane that we didn't normally do. Mm-hmm. Most of us had never been in an airplane, and that small confined airplane just slowly flying over the terrain, you know, it was really compelling.
It was. I loved seeing the scenery down below the plane. I enjoyed that show. And Roy Rogers, how could I forget? And Gene Autry, I didn't care for Gene Autry. And
I didn't either.
I really didn't care for Gene Autry. I
wonder what that was about.
Who is the other one? Buster something? No. What was Buster Bob? Who is the other guy?
Buffalo Bob?
That could be Buffalo Bob.
But that's Howdy Doody's friend.
Oh. And Silver was the horse.
Oh, Tonto and Long Ranger.
Yeah.
And Rin Tin Tin.
Oh, yes, Rin Tin Tin.
I mean, you could watch those and you knew that Rin Tin Tin would be there with you at the end of the show, so you never got really terribly angst. Uh-huh. It wasn't like Old Yeller.
Oh, I wasn't even going to bring up Old Yeller.
Oh, gee.
I had to bring it up.
Well, you know, we get into these reminiscing things, and I keep going back to the fact that, you know, maybe someday I'll get this done. But to go back and to really look at what they were telling us, you know, to make us who we are versus what those poor kids today are getting told, you know. Oh, Lord. I did a show on, not this Sunday, but on the 9th, regarding transhumanism. They tell you about that?
Yeah, I wanted to listen to it, but I was busy having that issue.
Well, that transhumanism thing is just one of those subjects that it seems so essentially stupid that I wasn't giving it any thought. But then I get these friends of mine on, and we do it. We decide we're just going to do a recording of an hour show because we haven't been together in quite a few years. So I get it together, we do it, and then I'm putting together the promo video, you know, image. And I started realizing how many places that you are actually seeing this transhumanism thing being put into your head. And the one that was the scariest was this. It was a cartoon type of picture of with not really. No, I'm sorry. It was not. It was like a photographic thing, but then kind of like just the robot and this little girl, and the little girl is bending over kissing the robot right where the lips would be, and it was a shoe advertisement for little girl's shoes, and it was just such an awful image. It's like you can trust a robot. You know, because, I mean, the first thing they're going to convince us is on this AI and all these robots. And then the next thing they're going to do is convince us that we can have our consciousness uploaded into these machine things. And then then we can be the Borg.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
But Walter, in his infinite wisdom and knowledge, gave me a YouTube that is by Dan Winters, one of his Orgone, you know, the people that he listens to about the Orgone. And Dan apparently went into, Walt said, he doesn't say the word transhumanism, but he talks about what happens at the DNA level and why you could never have transhumanism. So I have to look at that YouTube and figure out what it is, because it's just such a strange and peculiar, why would you want to do this? I mean, spooky shit. As far as I'm concerned,
that whole AI thing just it rattles me, because just watching the Terminators, that's the way I look at AIs. Like the Terminator, they're going to end up taking over because they're going to get so damn smart, and they're going to think, oh, those humans aren't able to keep up with us, so we're superior to them, and it wouldn't take them much to take over humans.
Well, there was a quote that I found, and it was 1982 or something like that. I believe it was 82. And he said that in 30 years we'll have computers that are so super intelligent that the human experience will disappear soon after. And it's like these people have been planning for this for a very long time.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's like crazy. So, of course, the concept of the Terminator being important in the discussion is that supposedly, and I don't know, this could be just somebody making up a law that everybody thinks is a good one and so we accept it as real, but the law that they have to tell you what they're going to do, and then you have to either say, no, don't you do that, or else, if you're silent or you say yes, then they do it. Because they made the decision that if you didn't say no, then you were agreeing to it.
Okay. Right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, that's just, you know, not right.
No, it's not.
So, the Terminator. Now, what is really kind of interesting about it is that the concept of it began, and I think I'm trying to bring it back because I really haven't really watched these things, but apparently it starts out with the Skynet. Do you know the story about the Skynet? The thing of things. It's basically...
Well, the Skynet is the one who started with the computer stuff, which went into the machines.
That took over everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that Skynet thing, I was thinking about it because somebody had brought it up again, you know, and I was thinking about it, and I said, oh, well, actually, the Shungite weave is a Skynet, you know? And as long as we have the Shungite weave out there, we can do the same thing, only with biological units. What does the Skynet artificial thing do? Well, it reaches out there and it coordinates the activities of computers. You know, which is an odd thing, because when I was getting out of the Army, I had business with one of the think tanks in the Washington, D.C. area, one of the big ones. And maybe it was one of the three top ones. And while I'm there, they offered me a job because they knew I was leaving. And the job they offered me was to coordinate the efforts of creating a communication basis so that the Army computers and the Navy computers and the Air Force computers could all talk to one another. Because up to that time, they weren't. Army computers talked to Army computers. It wasn't an integrated internet like we have now.
Right.
So essentially what they were looking for at that time, that was 1974, I believe, was somebody to head up the group that would eventually create the internet. And they wanted me to head it up. So I'm talking to my people that I've got this project that I'm working with them, and all of a sudden they were in this conference room. There was about about 8 of us, 9 of us, and one of the guys says to me, "We know you just got offered a job here," and I said, "Oh, news travels fast." And they said, "Well, we knew they were going to offer it to you." And then he said to me, "Would you please go around this table and tell us how old you think we are?"
Oh.
You know, and I'm like, what an odd question, you know?
Yeah, really.
So I start with, you know, the guy across from me, you know, and I start doing it. And when I finished, I said, "Did I pass the test?" And he said, "Absolutely not." He said, "Every number you gave is 20 years older than our actual ages."
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. He said they all had heart problems, stress problems, all sorts of health issues. And he said to me, "We love you so much, we're asking you not to take that job."
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
And I had spent a lot of time with these guys in this other project. You know, I was just stunned. But I still probably would have taken the job because, I mean, I would have had access to everything that was to be known, you know. But on the way home, I got caught in a traffic jam, and I said, "This is a sign. I ain't taking that job."
Now, what made you think that was a sign?
Because I hated traffic so much that, you know, if you put me in this thing, I mean, it was very late at night. It shouldn't have happened. It wasn't like it was a rush hour situation. It was 7:30, 8 o'clock at night when I left that place, and I get caught in a traffic jam in a place that normally wouldn't have it. So it was all very manipulated. So
you were thinking, "Oh, I don't want to get caught in a traffic jam every day."
Yeah. I said, I can't live like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody's talking. Hold on. You know, these computers, they call you at all sorts of times of day and night.
Oh, I know. It's awful. There should be a law against it.
Well, it's called the no-call thing, but I'm on the no-call list. It doesn't seem
I
to
am
help.
Too.
That thing is a total failure.
It is. Or they just don't give a rip. It's just lip service. "Oh, yeah, we'll put you on this."
Well, no. In the beginning, I did have a problem and reported somebody and never had another call.
Oh.
Yeah. So I do believe that in the beginning it was, in fact, working.
Well, it isn't anymore. And I'm even getting them on my cell phone, but I can block those.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so let's see. There was a few things I was going to tell you about or talk about.
Okay.
Do you have anything you want to go into, or you want me to just...
No, throw some out.
Okay. Okay,
I'm
this
one... trouble thinking.
Okay, so I was trying to... Oh, Cindy was over last night, and I was telling her about the fact that the Clinton Foundation, there was congressional hearings. And so then I thought to myself, well, I wonder what happened. So I just Googled it, right? And I got unregistered foreign agent, the Clinton Foundation oversight panel hears explosive testimony. And this was the 15th of December. Now, what I'm reading is RT.com. And
it's today. Okay.
Yeah, okay. So this, but the other options were basically saying, you know, it was being sensationalized. Okay? Whereas this seemed to be like a better, less dramatic explanation of what happened. So I'm just going to read it because I really don't know all that they say in it. Okay? You good with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Fraud investigators have exposed the Clinton Foundation's alleged misdeeds in a congressional hearing, describing it as a de facto foreign agent devoted not to charity, but to advancing the personal interest of its principals. All right? The Clinton Foundation acted as an agent of foreign governments early in its life and throughout its existence, according to testimony by former government forensic investigator John Monahan, which, if true, could not only render it in violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, but also would violate its nonprofit charter, putting it on the hook for a massive quantity of unpaid taxes. All right? So that's what they went after them for initially. So that, I mean, think about what the American people are going to be thinking here. You know, if you take them down for the naughtiness that we really know is behind it, if you take them down because they've tax fraud, you know, okay. I mean, because what do we know is coming up? Well, we do know that Bill Clinton and George Bush Jr. were the ones taking in the money that came from all over the world to support the Haitian people after the earthquake. In fact, what happened was that it got to the foundation, the Clinton Foundation, and then disappeared. Now, the mainstream media pushes the story that they sent it to the Haitian government, and the Haitian government stole it. Okay? But one of the most moving, and actually it kind of ticked me off about Trump when he was candidate Trump, all right? Because there was a YouTube video of Trump having like a press conference, but it wasn't in a big Oval Office or anything like that. It was more like in a hangar, you know? And there was this gentleman that got up and he identified himself. And they were confirming it.
Confirming what?
Well, I'm about to tell you that he had been the president of Haiti, and at the the guy that stood up in this press conference. So to ask the president or the candidate Trump a question. Uh-huh. And he identified himself as the ex-president of Haiti, and that he was currently, I believe, the head of the Senate in Haiti. Okay? And he proceeded to explain how none of the money that was donated ever got to the Haitian people. And he was so detailed in his facts that I was stunned. None of it got there. And he's telling candidate Trump, will you please look into this? That's, you know. And Trump, and I was not a follower of Trump, but I was somebody concerned about the Haiti situation. So I'm watching Trump, and Trump is listening to this guy, and you don't see any change in his face. He's just listening to this guy. And then I don't remember exactly what he did, but he sort of blew him off.
Oh.
Right? And that put me off. That was another thing that put me off on Trump. But now I know who Trump is. There were things that they knew that he just couldn't interact with. Like, for instance, Q went on a rampage of tweets, a whole bunch of them. And started asking Anonons if they wanted to ask questions. So he was getting all these questions. And of course, I was listening to Jason Sather, doing reading this whole stuff, this stuff, right? And he was saying, it was funny because it was like, the first question Jason started with was, is the world flat?
I saw that. Yeah, it cracked me up.
it cracked me up, too. You know what I mean?
Is that a real question?
Okay. And he said no. And then they asked him, is John Kennedy Jr. alive? And he said no. But he had to say no. If he had said yes, that's all you would have heard. I mean, it would have blown up the entire what they're doing. He had to say no. Disinformation is sometimes necessary.
And he does say yes, yes, yes. He says that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, because I do play Jason's thing on Monday, and I said, oh, people are gonna, you know, there's a few things that he does, Jason, I disagree with him on a few of his posts, but. Uh-huh. It's a free world. I put most posts up. If somebody goes into, I just listened to one that was 45 minutes long. I was taping it, and the guy went off on how awful things are going to get, and I just shit canned it. I'm not going to put people up and give them a platform who are just, it's not going to be awful. You know, because that was one of the questions that Q answered. They said, is this going to be, you know, is this reset going to cause, and he said, no. You know, it's not going to be what people are saying it is. Which a lot of people who have been watching, you know, how cautiously this is moving, you feel like, oh, these people totally understand they have to move slowly. So the Clinton thing, let's go back to it because it only gets better. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Monahan and fellow ex-government investigator Lawrence Doyle shared 6,000 pages of evidence with the IRS over 18 months ago, only to be met with silence. They shared them with the FBI multiple times. Ditto. Yet, excuse me, when the pair testified before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, they refused to turn over the documents, stating they did not want to interfere with any ongoing investigations. I wonder what this is about.
I saw that, yeah.
The committee chairman, Representative Mark Meadows, a Republican from North Carolina, said witness reluctance to share all the documents was hardly a good foundation for truth and transparency, while Representative Jody Heiss, Republican from Georgia, said he felt the duo was using the panel for their own benefit. Well, that wouldn't exactly surprise me. I mean, this is a game that's being played at every turn, you know? It's like, yes, I'm going to do this. What are you going to do now? You know, okay, anyway.
And regarding that,
yes,
I heard also that the FBI supposedly lost all those pages. Supposedly. And the guy said, well, I'm not going to turn these pages over to them. They lost them in the first time. Why would we do that now?
Well, okay. what she's referencing is that I believe it was the chief financial officer of the Clinton, it may be in here even, the Clinton Foundation, was raided by the FBI. That was another question that Q answered. And he said that raid was to protect the information and the witness, because the witness had,
well, that was a different situation than the one these two guys went before the panel.
Oh yeah, this is a different thing. Yes,
yes, yes, this is, yeah. Different pages that the FBI lost. Yes.
Oh, I see. What they already gave them, they don't have.
Right. Okay. Right.
That's, yeah.
The
that's
FBI what, can't seem to keep their hands on anything.
Well, it's two FBIs, the ones working for the cabal and the ones working for the white hats, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so.
But go ahead.
Okay. All right, so he says, these are not our facts. These are not your facts. They are the facts of the Clinton Foundation, said Moynihan. Maintaining his interest in the case is purely financial, not political. Testifying on their findings, Dole highlighted the foundation's alleged misuse of donated public funds, explaining that it falsely attested that it received funds and used them for charitable purposes, which was, in fact, not the case. Now, what they're referencing right here is the fact that the foundation was a non-profit foundation.
And we're so, talking about the Clinton Foundation?
The Clinton Foundation, oh, yes. Okay. It was a non-profit foundation, which means that they get donations. See, I was a non-profit. The Cosmic Reality Shungite was a non-profit, so I learned the hard way the problems with these non-profits. But the nonprofit is designed to take donations and then to apply, and you have to apply like 76% of the donations to whatever it is you're working on. So if it's anti-fluoride things, you got to show that you were putting that money there rather than putting it into the profits of the people that are running it. Okay? And if you do everything right, you don't ever pay a federal income tax. All right. Well, this Clinton Foundation was bringing in money, supposedly, in the billions and billions of dollars. So if it was all which is being looked at, this is why they're looking at it, that it was a money laundering scheme, they are going to be in jeopardy with the IRS for probably billions of dollars. Okay, so that's what they're talking about, the nonprofit. You know, you got to have the donations and you got to show where they went. All right. It was not the case. Rather, the foundation pursued in an array of activities both domestically and abroad, which included activities properly characterized as profit-oriented and taxable undertakings of, well, hold one here, properly, what are the undertakings of private enterprise, again, failing the operational test of philanthropy referenced above, referring to the equally non-charitable pursuit of funding the Clinton Presidential Library. John Huber, appointed by former Attorney General Jeff Sessions to investigate the Clinton Foundation, after Sessions reclused himself from doing so, was conspicuously absent from the hearing, even though his job is to probe the Clintons' approval of state of the sale of the U.S. uranium assets to Russia, which we call Uranium One fiasco. Judicial Watch's Tom Fitton also gave testimony outlining how it was hard to tell where the Clinton State Department ended and the Clinton Foundation began. So much that the King of Bahrain, unable to meet with Clinton as Secretary of State, secured a meeting with the foundation instead. So, the Democratic representative liked the testimony to Alice in Wonderland, claiming yet another investigation of the Clintons was an attempt to distract from the ongoing investigations of Trump. Or the Trump investigations are to, you know, take away the boom of looking at the Clintons. Oh, my goodness. We have a ruling saying there is sufficient grounds to go forward with a criminal investigation of the Trump Foundation, not the Clinton Foundation, he said, adding that the committee had an informant in the Uranium One deal-making process who was unable to present any evidence of wrongdoing. Oh, my God. He could be just as right as what I've said before. I don't know, but if one of these people are wrong, boy, there is a delusion factor involved in this. Don't you agree?
Well, that's one story. Another story is it's a pay-to-play. People had to donate these millions of dollars in order to play. when and I heard that Russia had to donate to the Clinton Foundation these billions of dollars in order for Hillary to sell them the uranium. Was it uranium?
It was uranium processing plants, but it wasn't the Russians that gave the Clintons. It was actually the people in Canada belonging to Uranium One that actually owned the property and were trying to, U.S. property, trying to sell it to the Russians. So it was the Uranium One people that put all this millions and millions of dollars into the Clinton Foundation. And interestingly enough, are you all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Interestingly enough, the way that this scam was brokered was that the Russians had a, I don't remember the name of it, but they had this agency that was acting like the broker in this deal. And the deal is, there is uranium processing plants in the United States that perhaps, why, I don't know, but it's owned by a Canadian company, Uranium One. Uranium One and the Russians want to sell that property to the Russians. And so to do that, Uranium One begins to negotiate all of this with this one agency. Let's just call it the Russian agency. So it's all brokered, you know, that's what, but they need U.S. approval. And they need it from the Secretary of State to begin with, and then it goes up to President Obama. Even he has to sign off on this thing because it's considered a strategic resource. So it's signed off on. Now, at that point, supposedly Mueller was the head of the FBI. He tried to investigate this and was shot down. I don't know if that's true or not, because other people will tell you, no, he just put it under the rug. But that's where he became involved with the Uranium One thing. So if everything that I've heard that makes sense to me says this was a treasonous act, you don't sell strategic nuclear resources to your arch enemy, the Russians. Why would this, why is this a good idea? Right?
Uh-huh.
So, and, but this happened back when she was Secretary of State. I don't remember exactly the year, but it's been a while that all of this happened. So now they open up this Russian investigation into Clinton, I mean into Trump, and now it's okay to also talk about anybody who has had interactions with a foreign government like Russia. And that's how they were allowed to start investigating the Clinton and the Uranium One situation. Okay? And it's almost like they fell for a trap. Because I remember when Trump was running as a candidate, he kept talking about, oh, I like those Russians. And I'm going, do you want to be president of the United States? What is the matter with you? You know? But this forced them into looking at him and the Russians, which they have not found any collusion at all.
Right.
Okay? But yeah. It also made them open to looking at Uranium One again, and now the Clinton Foundation, because right. It was the Clinton Foundation that where the money, you know, follow the money. Where was the payoff? The payoff was the Clinton Foundation. So what happened is that Hillary says, yes, we'll do this, and she signs off. Then Obama signs off on it. And so United States strategic nuclear resources are legally transferred to be under the control of the Russian agency, which is under the control of the Russian government. Now, at this point in time, what you look for is, where's the payoff? And the payoff was that the Uranium One executives, the high executives, started donating huge, I mean, it's so blatant, they're so stupid, it's blatant, donating all this money to the Clinton Foundation.
Uh-huh.
All right, so that's where they began to look at other incidences where it seems like they had governments had, and I remember it being brought up while she was Secretary of State, actually, that she was saying to, well, as Secretary of State, I will allow this particular beneficial to you trade treaty to go through if you give to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
And pay, it was pay to play, okay?
Pay to play, right.
Right. So that's why right now that them going after the Clinton Foundation itself is brilliant, because they start out and that what did you do with all this money? Show us where you spent it. Oh well, we bought a lot of land down in Paraguay, so when the shit hits the fan, we got some place to hide.
And one guy was saying today that he was in the Clinton Foundation thing, controlling finances, and it was Clinton, Billy Boy's birthday, so he gave him $1 million. And Clinton said, "That's my birthday present from you." He said he used it as his piggy bank, the foundation money. So Billy Boy used the foundation as his piggy bank. And
Billy Boy is Billy Clinton.
Yeah. No, yes.
Just to make things clear.
Yeah. Well, and he used a lot of it, he said, for his sexual stuff.
Well, it's kind of like, it's actually, you know, I say this, you know, somebody's going to control your mind. It might as well be you. Because right now what they're trying to do is they're setting up the American people to a new paradigm of thought, that the Clinton Foundation has been laundering money.
Yeah.
And they owe thousands of dollars to the IRS. Oh, well, where did the money go? Oh, look at all this money donated for the Haitian thing. You know where it went? Not to Haiti. Oh, my God, they stole our money that we donated to them? They stole it from the Haitian people that we thought we were giving to in compassion and empathy, right?
And that's just one place. Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, and then, and then eventually it's like, Why is there all these donations from these Uranium One people? What's this about? Oh, well, that's so that we could be treason. We could have a treasonous, because this is totally treason. This is absolute treason. It's because we wanted to do this treasonous act. And that's where they go to the guillotine. You know, so it's a setup to make the American people see a slow disintegration of the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons with them and all of their cohorts, including the Obama.
Yes, oh yeah.
You know?
In the Bushes. It goes all the way back.
All the way back. But yeah. This is such an incredible, event.
Realization.
That, yeah.
Exposing thing. Yes.
It's pretty, you know, so the people out there that say, oh, nothing's happening. Oh, things
it
are
is.
Happening. Things yeah. are happening big time. And one of the things happening is it's the top of the hour, and even though we started late, we're going to take a break. And Dolly, I'm going to play a 5-minute. Is that good?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So we'll be right back in about 5 minutes.
And when we come back, I want to talk about what Russell was telling me about white envelopes and Bush's ultra many funerals.
Okay. And welcome back to the Say What Show. It's December 15th, 2018. And with me, Nancy Hopkins, is Dolly Howard. Dolly, you back?
I'm back.
Awesome. Okay, you wanted me to remind you of white envelopes.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't heard of this. Russell is my son, y'all. He was asking me if I watched all the Bush's funerals. And I said, no, I wasn't going to watch all that farce. And he said, should have watched, Mom. I said, why? He said, there was some stuff going on. That I don't know if this happened at one of the funerals or at several of his funerals, but the presidents would all sit in this one area, lined up down the row, and they showed, well, I can't remember who, I think it was Hillary who picked her, what do you call it, that little paper they give you where you can go through and what's going to happen.
The schedule thing.
Program. They picked it up. The program, yes. And she opened it up and an envelope came out. So she opened the envelope and all of a sudden her face got really serious, like, what the, you know what.
Well, I saw I saw that part of it, and let me just, I'll tell you what I saw.
Yeah, tell me.
Okay, what I saw was that, okay, she opened up the program, and the envelope slid out into her lap. Now, remember, we don't know if this was Hillary or Hillary clone. I felt it was clone again.
Oh, that's another thing, Hillary versus clone, yes.
Right, because the clone was definitely at the McCain funeral, in my opinion.
Right. Well, I think the clone has been around for a while, according to what I've heard from a couple sources. Hillary is not with us anymore. It's her clones. Go ahead.
Yes. And so the reaction wasn't, there was no reaction, which I think if it had been the real Hillary, there would have been. Regardless of what it might have said. Mm-hmm. It would have been a smile if it was just a, you know, oh, hi, I love you, or whatever, you know. But there was no reaction. It was like, to me, she acted like a secretary that filed something that she had to give to the boss.
Ah, I see.
That's what I saw. So go on with what he said, okay?
Well, he said she, somebody was sitting behind her who opened, well, I think it was Laura Bush who opened her program and the envelope fell out and she opened the envelope.
No. Okay. All right. You want me to give you the real story?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'll give you the real story. What happened was that, and this was, Ben Fulford, told in his, you know, latest or second one before post, he talked about this situation. And what happened was that there was a camera on Jeb Bush, and Laura Bush it was like a studio seating, so they were tiered. And she was slightly below him. And they're all standing up. And Jeb, and the thing that, when it first started out, the thing that got me was he seemed awfully happy to be at a funeral for his father. You know, he had this big smile. He had this big smile on his face, and that struck me as being odd. But then Laura opened up this file and showed it to him, turned around and showed it over her right shoulder. Here, Jeb, look at this. And he went from this big smile into a state of terror in his face.
That's what Russell said. Yeah,
it was absolute terror, and he went like, you know, I mean, he was actually moving away from the paper. You know, I mean, he was in total shock of whatever happened. So this is what came out first, that this was such a noticeable change in this man based on something that he glanced at. He didn't take the time to read it. He glanced at it. So my suspicion, it could have been a photograph.
You know? Yeah.
Because it was just too weird. And so then somebody went and decided to track the envelope. And they went through all of, because the whole thing, it was the funeral of George. It was, I believe, at the Rotunda in the Congressional building. And I wasn't paying any attention to that. I was just watching this thing, you know, that happened. And what happened was that whoever put this collage of videos together went all the way back to when, if I'm remembering correctly, a Secret Service agent handed the file to Laura.
That's okay. What Russell was saying. He said, "Mom, I think it was the Secret Service guy who handed it."
That's what I think too. Okay, so they've got a picture of her being handed to her and her looking at it. Uh-huh. Now, from that moment on, her demeanor is one of somebody on a mission, angry.
Yeah,
you know, and they go through and they show different people this, and when she showed her husband, George Bush, he went into the strangest body reaction. He got very stiff, almost like convulsing a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh.
And just like, I mean, they were not displaying anger, they were displaying panic. Now, the George Bush part of it was more, you couldn't get a real look on his face. The film was not that clear, you know?
Uh-huh.
But, and then she showed Jeb, and it was Jeb's reaction that was just, I have never seen anybody go into that much state of fear, in television or in real life.
That's what Russell was saying.
It was bizarre.
He said, "Mom, you can't believe it unless you see it."
Yeah, it's something that you really ought to look at. Now, the other thing that happened was, okay, so Hillary opens up and she finds this envelope. But then, this thing between George Bush Jr. and Michelle Obama, all right? Because Michelle Obama, in McCain's, when McCain was buried, or the funeral, one of the funerals, she was sitting next to George. And he reached over and handed her something that she did not, she looked at it, but you couldn't, the camera didn't pick up what it was. And so everybody said, he gave her a piece of candy. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So this time, she's not sitting next to him. She's sitting, and he is, like they were in the first row again, but he's walks up to her, and he leans over, and he hands her something. Okay, so now, of course, everybody's watching this thing now, right? So he hands her something, and she did the same thing. She just put it in the palm of her hand. Only this time, when she looked at it, part of it flipped up, and it was like a strip of paper. It was not a piece of candy.
Uh-huh.
And they've got, I mean, they've actually got a photograph, some video from the video, you know, of the first one little corner came up and then a second one came up. So, you know, the supposition here is that these people can't communicate with one another because all their electronics have been compromised. And the only reason that so they go to these things to pass little messages off to them. I mean, it's like one of these bizarre, I don't know about that. I do not know about that. You know, it's just such a strange thing. So, but that is the story. But that thing with whatever Jeb Bush was shown terrified him.
So how did Michelle react? You didn't tell me.
She didn't. Again, she was stoic. She just looked at it. I didn't see any reaction in her. Of course, they cut the tape too. You know, I mean, they show you what they want to show you or whatever.
Right. The one that really got to Russell was Jeb Bush's reaction.
Oh, me too. Now, did you hear about the murder of George Bush back in the 90s?
Yeah.
You know, with the poisoning?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I remember seeing it.
You remember? No, I don't remember seeing. I saw it recently, but I didn't see it then.
Oh, I remember back then.
Because
I thought,
strange.
Wow, for him to be so sick, how did he jump up so fast?
For those people that don't know what we're talking about, there is a film, and this, okay, it was back, I think it's a 98.
I think it's a 98, yeah.
Yeah, it's sticking in my head. And they're at a restaurant, but it's a restaurant that is, I mean, it's like a big, long table. It's not like, it was weird, wasn't it?
It was almost like a party, but at a restaurant.
Right, it was that type of thing. And yeah. So the camera was quite a ways away because you had 1.5 people on the other side of Barbara who's sitting next to George, and he's got 1.5 on him. So you're fairly well back, you know, looking at this thing. And when the film started up, George is sitting upright, but then he had like a real sudden boom right into the table. You know, I mean, he was falling smack dab, like he passed out in a fraction of a second. Boom. He was going right into the table, into his dish. Now, if your husband has done this, he's all of a sudden seemingly passed out. First off, you're going to turn and go, what the hell just happened? And then you've got to make some kind of mental reaction as to what you're going to do. But that didn't happen. To me, she started moving about the same time he did. And she threw this big old napkin into his face.
Holding it like she was holding it against his nose and mouth.
Like she was suffocating him.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like always puking and I'm trying to get him cleaned up. It wasn't like that at all. And then they throw him to the floor rather violently, you know, right in his chair. They just tip the chair over. And the next thing you know, a version of George Bush jumps up with his hands in the air like, ta-da!
And when he went down, when they put him down on the floor, he had a suit coat on. A second later, he's hopping up, jumping up. He doesn't have a suit coat on. He's got a long-sleeved white shirt on. Now, how did he get that suit coat off so fast? How did he recover from such an awful fall in the plate with my face reaction to one of, ah, ha, 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 here I am?
Yeah, it wasn't like a collapse where, you know, he would have slid down the chair. No, this was a violent movement forward, like he had just got knocked out. Like he was dead. Like he just died, man.
Face first in his plate. Yes.
You know, we shouldn't be laughing about this because the poor man probably died. But then, you know, you go, well, why would they have, he died because they assassinated him. But why would they have done that? Well, at that very time that this all supposedly happened, George was saying some weird stuff. That's when he made the statement, if the American people knew what we had done, they'd chase us down the streets and lynch us. Mm-hmm. And he was saying a few other things that were like they might have been afraid he was a loose cannon.
Yeah.
But it was certainly, I mean, somebody just recently, I don't even remember which commentator, said, you know, in the near future, they're going to give degrees in the study of this time.
Yes, they are.
You know, because to even understand what's happening, I mean, we've been with this developing story since, well, I've been at it for 40 years. You know, so you see it, you know, developing in front of you and moving and growing. But if you had to go back and to figure all this out, my God, that is a tremendous amount of study, you know?
Yeah, it is. I don't know how you could even, I don't know how they could even go about it. If you hadn't lived through it, how could you put all these, because even though we've lived through it, we can't put the pieces together.
Well, we can at least find some of the pieces, and there's a lot of people out there, they don't even know there's a puzzle.
that's right. That's what I'm trying to say, yes.
You know, and okay, so here's another story. This caravan of immigrants, it's coming, it's growing, it's coming. And then all of a sudden it was like, never mind. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it wasn't until I was looking at the tape between the president and Pelosi was it, Pelosi was there, and Schumann, I think he's, that's his name. And he's the head of the Senate, I think. I mean,
he's a minority leader, yeah.
Yeah, he's the minority of the Congress. That's right. Okay, yeah, she's the majority leader. Okay, yeah, I mean...
Minority.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's one of those situations where I'm not paying too much attention to this. But anyway, they're in the Oval Office. And so I'm taping this interaction with these people. And the president was saying, you know... Well, yeah, they got here, but, you know, because they did. They threw stuff at them, and, you know, a few thousand people showed up, but most of them just turned around and went back into Tijuana, into the Mexican area, where they're now demanding $50,000.
From us.
From us, so that they have the money so that they can live in Tijuana until they have their status as Americans... immigrants, you know. I mean,
well, the story I heard was, you give us $50,000, we'll go home.
Oh,
if you don't, we're going to stay here and cause trouble. That's the story I heard.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
a couple of times.
Yeah. And the president, the president will fall for that one. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. I thought, oh, this is a good joke, and then I kept hearing it and seeing it, and I said, what? This is real.
Well, it was funny because when I Googled it, it came up Snopes and something else, you know, is this a true or false thing? And they both said, mostly true. And you know Snopes, they never find anything true.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was, but the thing that amazed me about it was that it just, the president put the troops out there, and these people threw some bottles and stuff, and so the troops threw some tear gas, and that was it. Now, this young lady did die under police custody. I don't know what that was, but that was because some of them just ran across the border into the custody of the United States Border Control. I guess they call them ICE.
Well, that's their new tactic. They go across the border so they can be arrested, and then they have to be held because they're crying for, what do you call it, amnesty?
Yes.
That's their new game. Climb under, go over, whatever. Just get beyond that fence into the U.S. so that they can claim amnesty.
I don't know if it's amnesty.
Whatever.
But anyway, yes, but, and again, you know, hey, listen.
I'm listening, but I can't hear you.
Oh, because I put myself on mute. All my political life, I've either been a Democrat or an independent. Mostly an independent, but you can't do local voting down here in Florida unless you're with one or the other. So, you know, I'd be a Democrat. But I've never been anybody who felt comfortable with 99% of what the Republicans said, including this wall thing.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't make economic sense to me. I believe that good fences make good neighbors, but because it was a Republican thing, I kind of didn't want to. It must be wrong if the Republicans think it's right. But when he was saying how the response, the decrease in the illegal immigration going where the walls are, that was enough for me to say, well, let's just stop this problem right now. Let's build those walls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's... But I got to tell you, Dolly... So he says, Nancy, did you want to say something? You're out, President Trump. And
yeah.
And she starts to, you know, talk. And again, they set it up so that he had a great mic. She did not. You know, he was looking directly into the camera. She was not. I mean, and apparently they had no idea that there was going to be a publicized, you know, that they were going to turn the cameras on for this beginning of this meeting, right?
That's no, what they thought it was a closed door
right?
meeting.
And all of a sudden,
when they're coming up into the White House, then the announcement's made, oh, we're going to have the cameras here. So Pelosi and Xu, whatever his name is, walk in there and they're shocked.
Oh, God. So anyway, she's trying to explain her her position on it. And I got to tell you, the president was very rude. He kept interrupting her because he kept giving her the same answer. She's saying to him, well, bring it before the Congress that we approve this wall because you've got enough votes to approve it. And he's going like, but we can't get it past the Senate. So why spend all our time doing that when the Senate won't pass it? And by the way, if we wait a couple of weeks, we could pass it in the Senate, you know? I mean, and she didn't understand that it was just a business decision.
Right.
You know, why spend all this money and time doing this when if you can't get this done, you're wasting your time. And he kept trying to explain that to her, and she kept going off on this discussion that I'm sure she had some reasons for saying it, but he kept interrupting her. And I said, oh, all these people that don't like Trump are really not going to like Trump because he did, you know, I mean, he was being so rude. So
he was being an ass.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I said, oh, my God, you know, they're not going to see why I would put this up because and I said, when they first started out with the Trumpster out there going to be a candidate, I said, I said, the main problem in the government is that it's a business. It is not a government. So if you've got that situation, then for crying out loud, don't put a politician in, put a businessman in. And so theoretically, I thought somebody of his knowledge and caliber and the way that he would look at this was much better than somebody like Clinton who's only thinking politics.
Money.
Well, yeah. The money. And power. Yeah. And power, and, you know, but, you know, it was really when, after he got elected, and I saw the energetic change in the man that, you know, I said, something happened. This is not the same guy. Because as a candidate, I couldn't stand listening to him for 2 minutes. I was like, the energy even was just awful. So, but when he got elected, there was a timeline change.
There was some change, yes. There had to be a change. I've said for years, we don't need just an asshole in the president's office. We need a businessman. I've said that since I was way young. I just wanted to see a businessman get in there. And then Trump started running, and I didn't know if I really like him or not, but I just knew he was going to be different. He was going to be a change, and he is a businessman. So my thinking was, yes, let's get him in there. He can't be any worse than the rest of the assholes. So I was rather glad he got in there. Well, I just wanted the change.
Yeah,
we were headed to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, it's an interesting time we live in, I must say. What was the other subject that... Oh, yeah, the California fires. That was another thing that was everybody's talking about.
Oh, man, yeah.
But they apparently have got them under control now. And... But, you know, you don't know. You don't know what's the truth and what isn't at this point in the game. Because
I was listening to an interview from a guy who lived there. And he was saying how it was, how they used the stuff. I can't remember what it's called, but it was, they can make a certain thing disintegrate and all the stuff around it is okay. So they can pick out a house, make it burn or whatever, but the car that's parked in the garage is okay. So they're using some kind of a thing. A beam, I think.
A direct energy weapon.
Yeah, that was it.
A DEW. That was what was used on the Twin Towers. You know, what I found fascinating, I mean, I absolutely can confirm that my study of DEW used in the Twin Towers and 2001 is the same stuff that I'm seeing in these fires, with especially particularly to the automobiles. Now, I would like to see what these automobiles look like now. If they're rusting, that's a telltale sign, but that's another story. We'll have to see about somebody out there check the rusting on those burnt out cars. It should be intense.
Why are they supposed to rust or not?
Well, what happened in the Twin Towers, okay, is they used a direct energy weapon, which puts up a vibration that breaks the building and pulverizes it at the molecular level. And it sort of is the same kind of concept when you can shatter glass with a certain frequency. Only this is a different frequency, and it's designed to essentially go after cement initially and metal. Because the only thing they found in the rubble was plastic and paper.
Yeah.
There was no metal. There was no door handles. There were no typewriters. They found one file cabinet. This is, 110 floors of office space, and you find one file cabinet that was melted down to the size of about a basketball. And inside of it, they know it was the file cabinet because the files, where they were connected, hanging on the ledge like they do, they got melted in there, and you can see the paper's still there, the file's still there. Just, about an inch strip, but it's definitely files. That's all they found. So we see the same thing with these fires in the cars. I saw this highway picture, and, this car is burnt, this one is. And then Walt was looking at it, and he said, oh, my gosh. He said, look at the highway itself. You can see a scorch mark. And he was right. So this beam comes through. Well, in New York, all those cars that started on fire essentially had been in the beam of this direct energy weapon. And because the key to the DEW is that it starts a molecular vibration that is discordant to keeping the molecules whole, and they just fall apart. And so because this metal was, it started this vibrational pattern, they couldn't quench it, they call it. They couldn't stop it. So all of the vehicles in particular, but also some of the metal that did survive the initial impact. All of these things, the rust was incredible. Within days, they were completely rusting out.
Wow. Huh.
Because the molecular sequence, the process, had not been turned off. It just had kept going. So they were deteriorating at an incredibly fast rate. And that's why I say, in California, if you guys can find cars out there that were supposedly burnt during these fires, see how fast they rust, because that's a telltale sign of a DEW weapon.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Have our reporters out there report in with some facts.
Right, right. Well, we just put it into the collective consciousness, so somebody else may be, oh, I'll go look at that,
Mm-hmm.
Well, report back. Somebody lead me to the information.
Yes. Wow. There's just so much going on right now, and it's so different than what we grew up with. Fires are different. They don't burn the tops of the trees. One guy was saying in those fires, they aren't burning the tops of the trees because they were valuable. Money-wise. And these different things I'm hearing, I think, well, that's not a real fire. And how do they put a tree out when it's already burning inside? But they can put it out before the top burns? I don't understand these kind of things. And then these stories that you hear. The Clinton Library stuff and the uranium stuff. And I'm thinking, geez, I'm just sitting in some big movie theater watching this ridiculous, humongous show going on before my eyes. And I'm trying hard to keep up with all the different little clues and incidents. And I really sometimes I wonder, where am I?
Well, here's the best one I've heard. This is without a doubt, hands down, the best one. David Wilcock does a recent interview, and he gives some a bunch of exclusive information to these two guys. I've been playing it on Monday's Other Voices. Well, he said that a decade ago, he had been told, I think by two different sources, that there was a town that was set up to house ETs. And they were who they were. They were a specific ET family, but now I'm fuzzy on who they were because I was, you know, I was only half monitoring it until he went to the next thing. And he said, so I have known for whatever decade or more, whatever years it was, he said that the town of Paradise, California.
Oh my gosh, Paradise.
Right, was a haven, was a haven for this ET group. Who,
oh my God.
Now, let me tell you, they had, okay, so they look like humans, but their hair is white. Their eyes have slits in them, but they don't have slits in them. They have diamond. The pupil is a diamond. And what was the other thing? There seems to be something else that would, if they were in the, but that they, you know, have ways of just looking like regular people. But he said that he felt that it was an attack on these people. Because there was about to be a disclosure with these people. Oh, and by the way, these are your neighbors. They've been here for 20 years. You know, this type of thing. And he painted kind of a dire picture of it. That he doesn't know. He knows that they can survive for a limited time up on the surface because they're not fit for the surface. So they spend most of their time down underneath, but that the fact that people were running to their cars and couldn't escape a fire, these are people that have been living in these fire conditions, you know, since they move into this area, and they can't get to their cars before the cars burn up out in the driveway, you know.
Wow. I mean, that reminds me of a movie Christopher Reeves was in. And there were all these children that were born. There was an incident that happened in the town. And all the women ended up pregnant when the incident was over. They had these babies. Babies all had white hair. And they walked very stiffly. They all walked in a line. They were just kind of like machine beings, and they had these powers that they could do. And they were turning nasty, mean. So Christopher Reeves was the teacher, and he knew. Well, they were trying to figure a way to get the children to where they could eliminate them, kill them. But the children could read minds. So in the long run, the peoples who were trying to eliminate the children were all eliminated, but the children lived. Except I think there was one that died, and they were really pissed off after that one had died, which made them all the more intent on destroying the people. I can't remember what the name of the show is, but that's what you said with the white hair and
Children of the Damned.
Yes, that was it.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
He whispered in my ear, you know. I'm sitting here, I'm going like, I know kind of what you, and all of a sudden I hear it, and I said, all right, I'll say it. Good.
Yes. I do believe that's the name of it.
But it was a remake of one of those black and white things that scared the crap out of me. I wouldn't watch it.
I I don't blame you. I didn't like that show. Scared me, too. And I think I was in my 20s when I saw it. Of course, that's been a few years ago now.
We should say something about Oak Island.
Is that on tonight? Is tonight the night?
No, Tuesdays.
Oh,
tonight's
okay.
Sunday.
I'm
no,
sorry,
tonight's Saturday.
Lost a couple days in there. Oh, wow. Oak Island, I don't even know the words to say. It was more of a filler type show, I thought, last week. What'd you think?
Yeah, I wasn't impressed.
I wasn't at all.
But what I really, they're showing promos in the next one, you know? And so we've gone through them, you know, well, it wasn't there, let's move here. And now I think they're into their third drill to this last coming show here. Mm-hmm. And they hit something. And the guy says, oh, man, I just hit something. Was it wood? Oh, no. This is much harder than wood.
Yes.
And they all are looking, you know, I'm afraid that's going to be the last bit of the show. And they'll, you know, it'll be another week or two.
I was thinking right away, it's that cement top that they pushed down.
Yeah, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, and that's what I thought when the guy said no, it was harder than that. I said, oh, they found it. They found it. I was more impressed with the promos for this coming week than I was with that show.
Yes, yes. But it was nice to see them take Cena's work and put it in that. Oh, and that was such a neat little house that they made into the...
That was a modular.
Museum,
yeah.
I guess, research museum.
But that's only on loan. I was surprised. And I was wondering, okay, what are they going to do with her books when they get it all set up and everything's... done and found on the island? Are they just, it's a, if that place is on loan, they're going to have to move all her books somewhere, all her research.
Dolly, I'm shocked at you. Don't you realize they're about to discover a treasure? I think they'll be able to buy it out.
Yeah, I guess they could.
I mean, you know, if they're on top of the chamber. And the chambers where they pulled out the gold. Remember, that was what it was that the early diggers had gone down with the drill and went through that hard thing and came up with gold in the drill bit.
Uh-huh.
And then they lost it because it started filling up with water, I think. It's always seems to be water. But they didn't show anything about Smith's Cove last week.
No, they didn't. I was kind of disappointed about that.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I really am looking forward to this coming week's show, though. How many more do they have to go?
I don't know, but I don't know.
I don't think it's many. I think it's more like three, maybe.
I think they do eight shows. For some reason, that sticks in my mind. You know, remember when they used to do like 32 shows?
Yes, I do.
Going back.
This is very, it disgruntles me when they only do a few and then they say, oh, season's over. What the hell? We didn't even get the season started.
Yep, I agree with you.
Jeez.
I agree. Oh, my goodness. No, it's, I look at so much of it now. I was thinking about this, you know. It's like, I don't know anybody that I talk to, us guys, you know, that doesn't see, first off, that the energies have gotten stable. It's not quite as squirrely as it was. that there are things happening in the 3D, you know, geopolitical realm. There is an awakening among our family and friends, whether they know it or not. They're just becoming more aware of, what do you mean the French people are in revolt? What's the matter over there? And so this environment that we're in is an interesting one, especially the timing of it, because so many people who are really kind of just now becoming aware or awake, whichever way you want to think of it. I like to think of aware. I think that those are the people that have always been the ones holding the energy space while a few of us were given the mission of go out there and figure out what the heck is happening. And these people have maintained love in their hearts and compassion, and they're empathetic, and they are generous, and they work for others as well as themselves. They're really good human beings. And those people have held together that energy that has kept the negative energy abey while myself and you and so many of us that, you know, came together in this format have been working very diligently to promote a new awareness. But in doing so, we have found solutions. We have gone from hopefulness to certainty. We have now the ability to kind of like wait for these others to come into their own awareness and sit there, and we now hold the compassion and the empathy and the hope and the joy and the certainty. You know, while they go through the little traumatic stuff that they're going to have to go through when they start waking up to this stuff. But not to worry, we're here. We've already gone through it.
Yeah.
You know, we're not concerned. Except that you just relax and you know, kind of wave, get on the waves and just let yourself come on to the shore. We got a bonfire here.
We're there for them.
Yep.
We were confused and didn't understand and all that. And we're still confused and don't understand. But we have more of an understanding than we had.
And we have more of an understanding of how many of us there really are. You know, it's not just us. You know, I mean, I'm continually talking about the collective consciousness of humanity, but the more I learn about the intricacies of life itself, the more I realize that I should be calling it the cosmic consciousness. Because
that's what I always call it, but that's because I can't remember what you call it.
Well, because in that essence of it, it's everything. It's the animals. It's the plants. It's the minerals.
Right.
It's everything that happens, you know, is part of this cosmic consciousness.
Right.
And once you go there, then you realize, oh, and also here is my future self, all of my past selves. You know, I mean, it's like you have endless opportunities to remember life and the experience of it.
Well, you do. I don't. I swear I've never been here before. But
well,
who knows?
No, I'm saying that it doesn't necessarily have to be just here. It's wherever your home world is.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you on your Dolly Cher show, you were talking about the dream you had where they showed you that, you know, here, this is home. This is where you can go if you choose to go.
Yeah. That's where I'm going when I leave here.
Yeah, home.
Here.
So what do you think home is to you? If you had to make up a home, you know, just imagine what home would be, what would you say you wanted to see?
I don't know if I go for the seeing as much as I go for the feel. like in, when I had my NDEs, the agape love, which means unconditional love, the love greater than you can ever think that it is, an acceptance for who you are, not what you are, not who you know, not what you've done, not what you haven't done, but for who you are. And it's a place where I can just spread out, a free place. I don't have a body to hold me in. My soul is held in with this body, and it can't expand. When I'm home, my soul can just expand and spread out, and I feel see beautiful colors. I guess I do see some beautiful colors, all life communicates. The flowers communicate with me. The trees and leaves talk with me. They communicate with each other. Everything communicates. And everything holds love and respect for everything else. And it's just... And you can go to, I've seen, I can go to a place and I can paint at home. I guess I can see. I was feeling when I was started out to tell you. But I can go in this beautiful room that I'm seeing. It has windows on all the walls and French doors on one, and it's got the blowing, billowing sheer type curtains, and the sunlight is shining out there on the beautiful grass and the beautiful water that I'm seeing, and I can paint these scenes. I can paint really good, and I can even sing if I want to sing while I'm painting. It's just a wonderful place to be. It's home, and I can see and talk with whoever I want to. It just by thinking about them. It's home. And yeah. I saw something recently about the sun. I think it was on Ancient Alien or something like that. And it said they were discovering that the sun is hot on the outer side, not on the sun itself, but on the outer stuff around the sun is hot, and the sun itself doesn't seem to be so hot. And it made me think, that's what I said. The sun is not hot. I've been there. I know I've been to the sun. I know the spaceship I've been in and everything. And I know the door that opened up to let us go inside the sun. The sun is not hot itself. Where I was, anyway. Of course, I'm a crazy person. I could be imagining all this stuff.
Well, we didn't imagine that weird thing yesterday with a Skype call.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, that was strange because I was sitting over there in the chair away from the computer, wasn't touching anything. You weren't touching your computer, and all of a sudden it started calling us. Skype called us, right?
Yeah.
Now, I have to go back and look at that. You and I got on and we're going like, why did you call? Well, I didn't call, blah, 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 right? Yeah. But then you all of a sudden, after I think it was at least 10, 15 minutes, got off of Skype, knocked off of Skype. And we were on Skype a lot, and we've never had that happen to us.
No.
So you get knocked off. So I don't tweak on the fact that we're in a group. I thought it was directly you and me. I didn't realize it was a group call. So I call. All right. And then Derek picked up and then Colleen reacted. But they reacted to that second connection, Dolly, not the first one. So if somebody else had instigated it unconsciously, those two would have been notified of the first call, but they weren't.
I thought the first call we instigated and the second call was the one that we didn't understand what happened.
No, it was the first call. I know how the second one happened.
See, but I have a heart attack and my flipping brain flips out.
Well, so...
So anyway, it was surprising because all of a sudden, Derek's with us. We don't even know how we got back together. Derek's with us, and Colleen shows up. What? And then Dave's standing there laughing.
Well, that's when we found out that Derek had lost his power.
Oh, yeah. Did he ever get it back on?
I don't know, because I haven't been up. He hasn't messaged me. But on a Saturday, if he did go to the trade show, which was in Seattle, then I don't normally hear from him until he gets home at night.
Ah.
So. That was very strange.
Weird things are happening these days.
Yeah.
I guess I just have to relax and accept it.
Go with the flow. Oh, man. I went into the bathroom when I told you, well, I'll connect with you in a minute here. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And I go in there, and as soon as I get there, the light went out. And I thought, oh, my God, did I lose power, you know? But no, everything else was on. It was just that the light went out, you know? But it was like, oh, I mean, and my reaction was, it was funny, like, oh, just like Derek, you know? It's like, it wasn't like a panic thing. It was like, whatever. I'm so much more relaxed about whatever happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah.
I'm not...
I always think... I wake up in the morning and I thank God I wake up here in here on Earth in my bed in my bedroom. So I thank God for that. And then I say, so, what's going to happen today?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I flip the news on, the OAN and Fox. I flip between them both to see if anything exciting's going on, arrests or things like that, or somebody suicides himself. But I find it kind of exciting to be around these days, and I really would like to stick around and participate here on Earth. But if I can't, you know, I'll be there with you.
It's a really, really interesting trip. I mean, it's like those people that think we're crazy and don't listen to our stories are missing out on such a great story.
Yeah.
You know, never mind that it might be something that you could learn from what we're saying. Never mind all that. Just think of it as, man, you know, this is like the best story in the universe right now, and you're paying no attention. It's Star Wars on steroids.
Yeah. We aren't making it up. It's happening right in front of your faces.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just reporting on what's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, are we biased towards the president? Yes. Why are we biased? Well, because you can find out the other side. Just go to the media, that you know, on television, and, you know, what do they call it? The main
media. NBC.
Oh, go there. They'll tell you the story.
But ABC, if you want, CNN, that you, kind, yeah.
Right. If you want to come and find out what may be another version of what could be real, then you come here. Are we biased? Yes, because we're trying to give the president and what I call the oath takers a platform to make people aware and not scared.
Right. And I like the way that we're going these days. It's more positive than we've been my whole life.
Yes, it has. Okay, listen, we're at the top of the hour, so I'm just going to thank you for a 10-minute short one, but that's okay because you did great. I appreciate you so much for hanging in here. And
I'm doing my best, Nancy.
have a good night and tomorrow. Have a good tomorrow.
Yeah, you
tomorrow
too.
Is Sunday. Yes, Sunday? Yes, it is.
Yeah. Because you told me this is Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday, yeah. Yeah, Sunday follows Saturday, so. Probably Sunday. Unless it's Monday.
Who knows?
We can always have a timeline change, you know. Be prepared for the changes, you know. Practice your sea legs. You know, do a little dancing.
And get explore in this world.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so you want to say goodnight?
Bye-bye.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.